welcome to Guerrilla Radio. Well, last week, the standoff between locally concerned Burnaby Mountain residents and allied environmentalists opposed to the proposed Trans Mountain project, and Kinder Morgan, the company hoping to twin its tar sands interest by doubling down on the pipelines, took another turn. The BC government granted an injunction ordering those blockading surveyors who hoped to map a pipeline route through a conservation area on the mountain to leave or face arrest. Some have left, some say they will leave, and others are not prepared to bow out, while still others have arrived to reinforce the blockade. Zoe Blunt is a Victoria area-based environmental activist, organizer, and facilitator with wildcoast.ca and the Victoria Forest Action Network. She's a citizen journalist whose work has been instrumental in the implementation of myriad campaigns locally and throughout the province to protect BC's wildlands, ensuring habitat viability and cultural continuity for the people and animals in it. Wild Coast sees Burnaby Mountain as vital in its attempts to forestall plans to make of Vancouver a major transshipment hub for tar sands bitumen. Zoe Blunt in the first half. And Kathy Kelly is a longtime peace and social justice activist who has lived with and been a witness to the suffering and struggles of people brutalized by war and the business of greed from Afghanistan, Iraq, and Palestine to Central America, Haiti, and at home in the United States. Kathy is also founder of Voices in the Wilderness and Voices for Creative Nonviolence, has written too many essays and articles to relate, is co-author of the book Prisoners on Purpose, A Peacemaker's Guide to Jails and Prison, and authored the book Other Lands Have Dreams, From Baghdad to Pekin Prison. Kathy Kelly returned from Afghanistan again in the second half. And Victoria Street News publisher emeritus and CFUV radio broadcaster Janine Bancroft will be here at the bottom of the hour to bring us up to speed with some of the coming week's news from our city streets and beyond there too. But first, Zoe Blunt and Telling It on the Mountain, Burnaby Mountain, that is. Stick around. Well, welcome back to the program, Zoe.
Hi, thanks, Chris. Thanks for having me on today.
Hey, it's my pleasure, of course. Well, now, Zoe, we've been getting fast-breaking news here. The RCMP are on the mountain, but no arrests have been made, at least not according to the Twitter feed I'm looking at. Now, the injunction that was issued Friday, Zoe, this is a sort of a made-in-BC solution to social activism with a long and storied past here. For those perhaps maybe unaware, just what is an injunction in the broader environmental context, and what does it mean for the Burnaby Mountain action, Zoe?
Well, what people have been doing is occupying a public park, a conservation area that was set aside decades and decades ago on the side of Burnaby Mountain. And they're not breaking any laws. They're in a public place. They're not breaking any laws, but they are stopping these workers from coming in. And what they're trying, what the workers are trying to do, this Kinder Morgan tar sands pipeline. They want to drill a pipeline right through Burnaby Mountain. They have property on either side, and they think that they can just put a shaft right through horizontally. But first they have to take some samples of what's inside the mountain, and that's what people have been preventing them from doing. And so they've been doing that very peacefully, and, there's been no threat, anything like that. So what they do, and this is what they do here in BC, is that the company will go and file a civil lawsuit. And so they name the individuals whose names that they know, and they name, people who they don't know, John and Jane Doe, and they name the groups that are involved in organizing this grassroots action. And so they are defendants in a civil claim. But the company has said, they're suing them for millions and millions of dollars, and the company has said they're not really interested in pursuing the lawsuit. They just want to get the injunction. So the injunction is a court order when they go and they say, Judge, we filed this claim, we're losing all this money, our workers can't work, we need you to give us an emergency order to clear those people away so that we can do our job. And that's the order that was handed down on Friday. And it's a civil injunction. And this is the authority that's giving the RCMP the authority to go in and arrest people if they decide to do that. And I think they will very soon.
Well, now, Zoe, are there anybody from wildcoast.ca or Victoria Forest Action Network at the blockade? And have either of the organizations, well, have either of those organizations that you're a member of been named in the Kinder Morgan suit?
No, I think we just missed that. I was there, but I guess they didn't see me. And some of our members are there, but I'm not going to say their names.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole intention of this, is to put a chill out there on anybody with the temerity to stand up for what they believe isn't right.
It's called a SLAP suit, and the SLAP stands for Strategic Lawsuit Against Public Participation. And, yeah, the whole thing is, you know, this huge billion-dollar multinational corporation suing ordinary citizens for millions of dollars just for standing up for what they believe in. It is definitely supposed to put a chill on everybody. It's not working.
Well, yeah, and I was just going to say it doesn't seem to be working because, yeah,
no.
There's some people have left the mountain and they've retreated strategically, but others have come up in large numbers, actually larger than the numbers that were originally there, to express their displeasure both with what's going on up there or intended to go on, but also with this injunction.
Right. There's hundreds and hundreds of people on the mountain this week. Just, you know, camping out, hundreds and hundreds, and more coming all the time. This is the Clackwood sound of our day right now.
Well,
we absolutely have to win this.
Well, and that's a very poignant comparison, Zoe, because that was where we first saw the introduction of these kinds of injunctions and the mass arrests under an NDP government, it must never be forgotten, of close to 900 people who were trying to protect Clackwood from the saws.
Right. And so we have this proud history. We have this long and proud history of people standing up for what they believe in and actually fighting these giant corporations and winning, using peaceful means and winning. And I think, this is what everybody is watching to see what happens right now on Burnaby Mountain.
Yeah, I'm following it through Twitter at hashtag Burnaby Mountain, one word. Are you in contact currently, Zoe, with any of your cohorts that are on the mountain?
Yep, and with some of the organizers as well. Some of these are people who have, come to our spring trainings, who have come to our events, and who've been involved in activities like the Unist'ot'en Camp blockade up north. So they're coming from a really good, solid grounding of understanding what this kind of action is about and what it is that they're defending.
And what are you hearing from them as of up-to-the-minute reports?
The interesting thing is that this is really being led by First Nations people to a large extent. I mean, there are a lot of grassroots non-Native activists. There are a lot of non-Native groups. But, it's the Tsleil-Waututh First Nation who has filed a lawsuit against Kinder Morgan and against the National Energy Board. And they're on the scene. They're carving totem poles. They are, asserting that this is their unceded territory. They don't have a treaty. They have never given up this area. So this is just so much unity. There's so many groups working together. The whole Burnaby Council, the mayor, all the councilors, 100% unanimous, 100% consensus. That no, they do not want this pipeline. They had a pipeline explosion in Burnaby some years ago, and just devastated this residential neighborhood. And they all remember. They remember. They won't forget.
Yeah, and I recall that too. A backhoe had unknowingly been working over top of a portion of the pipeline. It's an operating pipeline, and it hit. And man, it was high pressurized oil, not tar sands oil, which is different, but in many different ways. Maybe Zoe, we should explain what this proposed project is about.
Yeah, they're bringing tar sands oil from Alberta to the port of Burnaby, and then they're going to load it onto tankers, and it's going to go to China if they succeed. So it would be impacting all of us, potentially. They're going to have these huge, huge oil super tankers coming right into Burrard Inlet in Vancouver, loading up, turning around, going underneath the Lionsgate Bridge, and sailing out around the corner, around the southern part of Vancouver Island, and then up past our shores here in Victoria, and off to the east, or to the west, to China. And so none of this oil is going to be refined here. None of it is going to be used in Canada. It's strictly for the export market. We get none of the benefits, you know, and all of the risks. I mean, the kind of benefits that they're offering us is to have a person in each community who can be in charge of an emergency spill response kit, which is going to be like absorbent materials and dispersants. And, you know, a radio. You can have a radio and you can have a flare. And, you know, there's no way that there's any possibility of being able to contain an oil spill, especially if it's diluted bitumen from the tar sands. There's no way that we even our Coast Guard has been gutted. Even our, you know, the tugs mm-hmm. from the emergency response vessels on the coast have been eliminated. You know, we saw this with the tanker off of Haida Gwaii a couple weeks ago. There's just no way to even assist if one of these tankers gets into trouble, and it is inevitable with the kind of seas that we have off our coast here. It is inevitable that there would be a tar sand spill or a pipeline spill or probably both, you know, and maybe several, because Kinder Morgan does not have a very good safety record, as they've seen already in Burnaby when one of their tar sands pipelines, yeah, was hit by a backhoe, wasn't properly marked on the map. You know, and so now they're trying to twin that pipeline, actually make a whole new pipeline because they want to do this new route through Burnaby Mountain. Yeah. And everybody along the whole, you know, the indigenous people all around the Salish Sea, so on both sides of the border, all up and down the coast, have all said no. And they're standing on the mountain as well with their drums, with their songs, with their traditional carvings, and they're saying no as well. So spirits are really high. People are really happy for the opportunity to be able to stand up to this corporation, and then they, you know, the feeling is if they can hold the door open, you know, for just a few days, if they can hold it open and stop this drilling from happening for a short time, that the appeals that are being made in court against Kinder Morgan are going to be heard and that they will be upheld. So they just have to hold off the drilling for a short time is what we're hoping. Before the Tsleil-Waututh appeal goes forward, and the city of Burnaby is also asking for a stay. They're asking that the injunction be set aside because they've said no. They said they've told the National Energy Board and Kinder Morgan, you may not do this in our conservation area. You do not have permission.
Well, yeah.
So we'll see.
And in they had elections the same day we did over here, and and their Kinder Morgan pipeline candidate, the incumbent mayor, comfortably won re-election, and he accredits that and the loss of seats of three councillors who were pro Kinder Morgan. He says that the feeling in the community, by at least as he sees it, is very clear. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking with Zoe Blunt, and Zoe is a Victoria area-based environmental activist and organizer, facilitator with wildcoast.ca and the Victoria Forest Action Network, a citizen journalist. Her work has been instrumental in implementing a myriad of campaigns locally, and she's been at this for a very long time. Zoe, I was looking at some of my records of our past conversations, and they go back like more than a dozen years. But tonight, Zoe, we're talking about what's going on with this Kinder Morgan pipeline. They already have, Kinder Morgan does, a pipeline that goes over the Coquihalla that's already busted at least twice because they're sending diluted bitumen through it. These are 60-plus-year-old pipeline that was designed for more liquid oil. The higher pressure needed for the bitumen is challenging and already decrepit system, but there was talk, there was controversy, I suppose, about the nature of bitumen. Some saying, well, would it sink or wouldn't it sink, or is it more or is it less dangerous than regular oil? We see now that the bitumen spill that happened in Kalamazoo in Michigan in the United States, that's, what is it, almost 3 years ago now? They've spent $1 billion trying to clean up the Kalamazoo River, and yet it's still polluted. Well, what do you have to say about those defenders of this pipeline project when they claim that, you know, cleaning it up is possible, besides this guy with the flare gun and the kitty glitter and the AM/FM radio?
And the bounty extra thick towels. No, they are really trying to fool people. They're really trying to fool people about that there is a potential to clean up this spill if there is one, when there is one. There's not going to be any recovery, and you can still go up to Alaska where the Exxon Valdez ran aground. You can still turn over the seashells and the rocks on the shore and find the slime underneath, find that oily rainbow sheen from the oil, from the Exxon Valdez, and that was over 20 years ago. It does not go away. It does not break down. The only cure, the only way to clean it up is to not let it happen in the first place. This is a precautionary principle. And all the people on the coast, the indigenous people and the non-indigenous people who rely on the fish and the crabs and all the seafood, this is a multi-million dollar economy on the coast, as well as being, a sustainable food fishery as well. There's so much at stake. It is absolutely priceless what they're willing to throw away, and it's just for profits, right? Mm-hmm. It's just because this is a product that they can stick in a tanker and drive it to China and make some profit off of it, private profit. And this is the same old thing. We take away the public's rights and we distribute the profits to the private companies. It's outrageous. And I'm so cheered to see these wonderful, brave people standing up. And these are people who I know, people who I've helped train, who I've worked with before, and I'm just so happy that they are acting on their convictions, that they're standing up for what they believe in, and that they won't back down.
Yeah, you mentioned the Unistoten camp and the training that you've been conducted. Can you describe, Zoe, what kind of training you're talking about and what's going on at Unistoten, even as the Burnaby Mountain blockade continues?
Yeah, we've been sharing skills about nonviolent civil disobedience. So how to, link arms, how to sit down, how to peacefully occupy space, how to prevent people from driving up a road just by, taking over the road. We've talked about all kinds of campaign strategies, how to engage people, how to bring them in, how to do media, and about legal rights. So, like, what are our rights if we're facing arrest? And what is an injunction? And this has been really, really, really valuable for people to be able to implement that. We actually are going to be doing a lot more training in the coming year. We did a really great spring training at UVic this past spring. We're going to do it again this year. And we actually, in 2015, and we actually have a house in Stoops now. This is the Solidarity House. So this is going to be our base of operations for Forest Action Network in Stoops in the coming year. Going to be helping with the caravan to Unistoten camp, and this is another indigenous blockade up north where they're blocking the Enbridge tar sands pipeline and several liquefied fracked gas pipelines. So it's hundreds and hundreds of people have been getting involved with these campaigns through Forest Action Network just because we can offer them our skills, our experience, give them a chance to brainstorm with us and to contribute and to be a part of this movement. And it is a growing movement. It is not going away.
Yeah, BC seems to be really at the crux of everything that's, really wrong with our modern world, especially with resources. We've got big coal deposits that some are trying to get going here, even on the island. The frack gas, of course, and these pipelines from the tar sands. A few years ago, British Columbia elected Gordon Campbell with the blessing of the now sole MLA for the Green Party because he brought in a carbon tax and was that on the strength of that claimed by some environmentalists to be and even granted an award at Copenhagen in 2010 for his efforts because they were going to bring down the province's contribution to global greenhouse gases. What about the transshipment of the tar sands bitumen and the stuff that we do here with fracking and everything else that's maybe burnt somewhere else, but it comes from here? Is that counted as our province's contribution to the warming of the planet?
It's going to completely blow apart any commitment that we had to reducing greenhouse gas emissions. There's just no way. Just the fracking alone in BC is so destructive. It releases so much, unstable, volatile gases. You know, it's unbelievable. You know, so it's, yeah, I still can't get over the conservation voters of BC actually endorsed Gordon Campbell a couple years ago. Yeah, that must be embarrassing. But, you know, so this is why I say grassroots action, direct action is really where it's at, because it can't be co-opted by groups who want to greenwash their favorite politicians. You know, this is the real thing. You know, and even with all the new rules that Harper has brought in, you know, we've heard about FIPA, the free trade agreement with China, and how they're going to be locked into that. It doesn't change the basic strategy, which is these private companies, you know, have to make money. And if we can't convince our government to do the right thing, then we can convince the companies that they're doing the wrong thing and that they're not going to make any profit because, you know, in the case of Burnaby, for example, they want to drill through that mountain, they're going to have to drill through 1,000 people first. And that's going to be very slow. It's going to be very expensive. They're not going to make any profit at the end of it.
Well, and again, as we speak right now, the standoff with the RCMP on the scene, there has been, I'm just looking at the Twitter feed of a few minutes ago, and there's been no arrests supported yet. You think it's do you think they will start these arrests, or do they wait for the appeals that you mentioned earlier that are in process?
Oh, they're not waiting. No. They're not waiting for any appeals to come through. They went ahead with this injunction while these court cases were still in place, you know, before they heard the arguments from the Tsleil-Waututh, for example. I think they're waiting for the numbers to go down. And so now is a really good time for people to go to Burnaby Mountain. There's lots of people there. There's lots of food. People are in high spirits. And, you know, the other really great story about this is the fundraising that they've done. When the lawsuit started, they said, oh my God, we need to hire lawyers, we need to do all these things. And they raised, I think the first legal appeal that they put out for their legal fund, they raised $53,000 in 3 days.
Yeah, that was amazing. Well,
yeah.
How, we're fast running out of time, Zoe. How do people who are listening to us, who want to get involved, who maybe they don't have Twitter, again, hashtag Burnaby Mountain, how do they get information on this? How do they get involved?
Well, if you're on Facebook, you can go to facebook.com/Burnaby Mountain. Or you can, yeah, search for Burnaby Mountain on Facebook. I wish I had a link to handy right now, but Broke is the name of one of the grassroots groups that Burnaby residents opposed to Kinder Morgan expansion. And I think that's broke.ca. So yeah, if you can, give them a hand because they're broke, okay?
All right. And wildcoast.ca is your website where you can hook up with what Wild Coast and Victoria Forest Action Network is up to.
Yeah.
Thanks.
If people want to go to the mountain and they want to connect with the people that are working with us, then they should give me a call, 250-813-3569, or email me at zoe@wildcoast.ca.
Zoe@wildcoast.ca. All right. Well, thanks a lot, Zoe, and we'll be watching this. Thanks a lot for coming on today.
Thank you very much, Chris. Have a great day.
Wow, you too. Till the next time. Okay, now I'm going to take a brief break, but when I come back, I'll be joined by Janine, and she's going to talk about some of the stuff that's going on around here and a little further, too, so stick around for that. Well, hey, I just want to keep listening to that. Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Joining me now, as oft times she does, is the Victoria Street News Publisher Emeritus and CFUV Radio Broadcaster in her own right, Janine Bancroft. Hey, Janine.
Hey, Chris. I received an email from Jim Erkirlishan, who lives in Nanaimo, BC. He used to write little editorial pieces regularly that I would publish in the Street News, and I guess he still got me on his email list. So what he's saying is that back in 2004, you'll remember the great tree sit at Cathedral Grove.
Sure. Yeah, with Igmar and crew.
Yeah, and they were there for quite some time, and at that time, Judge Cullen was asked to issue an injunction against the people trying to protect that area of parkland from a Kinder Morgan pipeline. That was not a Kinder Morgan, but whatever it was, they were in a park, and they were trying to protect it from, I believe it was parking lot expansion and such.
Oh yeah,
like
yeah, that was Mack Blow, yeah, the timber company,
and they
wanted if millions of people have been to Cathedral Grove from all over the world, of course, which is one of the reasons that, you know, it was kind of crazy what they were planning to do. But there is a small parking lot in there, and so what Kinder Morgan or now you got me going, what McMillan Blodell or Mack Blow, they were proposing to broaden this, to enlarge this parking lot and cut down all these ancient trees in the process, the reason that many people were going there in the first place, but making the rest of the tall trees, these are, you know, sad remnants of what used to be here, are vulnerable to wind blow down because these trees protect each other. You can't just have these big behemoth trees standing alone. They'll get blown over, and especially there because of the topography, that there's high winds through the mountain passes, et cetera, et cetera.
Right, right. And so at that time, Mack Blow went to the BC Supreme Court, and Justice Keanu refused to issue the injunction. And she noted in her decision, Jim reports, that the contempt of court injunction should be used sparingly because it can result in quotes, legitimate concerns of citizens being used by special interests to transfer the dispute to a court. So she, Judge Keanu, noted that there are already laws against direct actions, and a contempt of court ruling without other laws being broken is an assumption of guilt, and she had no desire to see her court used by this corporate special interest to circumvent citizen complaints. So Jim's argument is that the court now is that's looking at this Kinder Morgan Burnaby Mountain situation ought to perhaps look at this precedent and keep this in mind.
Yeah, well, and there's other jurisdictions. Sorry to jump in there, but these slap suits that that Zoe mentioned, I mean, they're not unique to British Columbia, but in a lot of other jurisdictions, both in Canada and in the United States, they've been outlawed because they are abused and they are used by the powerful to intimidate the weak, and they're using the courts to do it. As you know, maybe they realize that their cases have no merit, but the intention is to bankrupt and terrify anybody that would stand up against them.
Right, right. Yeah. Okay. So we'll keep an eye on Burnaby Mountain. The website I think that Zoe was referring to is burnabypipelinewatch.ca, and there's also the Facebook group. And they are looking for people to go to the mountain. There are ways to go to the mountain and not, you know, risk arrest, just to bear witness if people are concerned about that. You know, there's been a huge victory in the U.S. with the Keystone Pipeline being voted down, but that's going to come around in January. And then, of course, in other pipeline news is Enbridge. The Northern Gateway pipelines are, of course, also something that we need to keep an eye on. This December is the fourth anniversary of the Save the Fraser Declaration, which was signed by representatives of over 100 First Nations, saying that they're not going to allow Enbridge to build pipelines through their territory. And so last year they had a huge walk with tens of thousands of people. This year they're asking people to send a photo of themselves in an area where that it is potentially threatened by the Enbridge pipelines, and then send that to them, and they're going to put together a photo collage for the Enbridge people. It's on Facebook or Yinka Dene Alliance at Gmail. You can send it there, and they're asking for people to participate with that. And then if people want to see some of the beautiful area that is threatened along our coastline, Richard Boyce has spent last spring in a kayak journeying BC's northern coast and filming, and put together a beautiful video he's calling Coastal Tar Sands: Journey to Deleted Islands. And I believe he called it that because in the Enbridge commercial, when they show the map of where the supertankers would go, they've left out a whole bunch of islands and made it look like it's safe passage and everything. But he actually went in a kayak and shows the route that these supertankers would have to go. And so that is online at coastaltarsands.ca. It's showing tonight in Courtney at the North Island College. And then in Victoria, there's an event on Saturday, Take Back Our Coast. I wish they'd just call it The Coast, but Take Back the Coast, Saturday at 11 at the Burnside Gorge Community Association. And this is a bunch of NDP people, actually, Randall Garrison, Murray Rankin, and Nathan Cullen, hosting a town hall discussion to talk about how we can work together to stop the Northern Gateway Pipeline. And everybody's invited to that, 11 till 1 at 471 Cecilia Road in Victoria. And then also tonight, Chris, the Open Cinema is launching its 12th season. This is Mandy, and she shows a variety of different documentaries through the year, and then they have a discussion about it afterwards. And tonight they've got an award-winning documentary called Just Eat It, and it's about food waste. And they're looking to screen it. They're screening it in Victoria at the Event Center on Broad Street, also in Sydney at the Mary Winsker Center, and then on Salt Spring as well. And then you can watch it online if you want. And the website is opencinema.ca, and then you can join in a conversation online. So she's really going high tech with this. So that's it.
Okay. I saw a little bit of this online, a week or so ago, and, uh-huh. and this guy and his, a couple, I don't know if they're man and wife, but, or woman and husband, but, they decided that they're going to try to do this for a year down in the States, and the one thing that sticks with me is that the guy, they followed them over this period of the year, and after a few months, we thought we were going to get real skinny and everything, but he'd put on like 12 pounds or something, you know, mm-hmm. just getting food out of, you know, dumpsters and not, you know, throwaway food, but, you know, cans of stuff that was perfectly good and all manner of things.
All kinds of stuff. I've gone with binners and it's outrageous what people find in there. Not just food, but like electronics and clothing, and you just can't believe what people throw away. It's pretty shameful. So, it sounds like an interesting documentary. So, opencinema.ca. And then Thursday we talked a little bit about the rally at the Art Gallery in Vancouver tomorrow for the Mexican situation with the missing students. So that's happening at 4:00. And then also tomorrow is the Trans Day of Remembrance, and so at 7:00 at the Carnegie Center, people are going to be getting together to memorialize murdered trans family. They'll have an open mic and documentaries and a candlelight vigil. And they're having vegan muffins, which I just think is way cool. And then in Victoria, a film called Greedy Lying Bastards at the 2994 Douglas Street. This is the monthly social justice film night. And so this is a documentary that investigates the reasons behind stalled efforts to tackle climate change, and they look at organizations like ExxonMobil and the Koch brothers and that sort of thing. So that sounds pretty fun tomorrow night at 7. And I know I'm running out of time. I just want to quickly mention the documentary Cowspiracy is screening at Eternal Abundance Sunday at 8:00 in Vancouver, 1025 Commercial Drive. And this is a feature-length environmental documentary looking at why the world's leading environmental organizations aren't talking about the destructive animal agriculture industry.
Yeah, and that is interesting too, because you get people that you would really expect to be knowledgeable about this. I mean, I saw this, or at least on the radio on CBC, they were talking about Sand Wars, this terrific documentary that aired on television a few weeks ago. But the woman speaking to the CBC was saying that they screened this at an ocean convention down in the United States in California, and she said that there was hundreds and hundreds of very smart and dedicated environmentalists in the audience, and not one of them had any idea of the dire state of the world's sand supplies right now and how much we depend on it in our modern world as well. Very interesting. But okay, so Janine, your program The Winds of Change alternates every Thursday morning at 11 a.m. with Mehdi Najjari's Hidden News, and it is you this week, right?
It's me. I have Dolores Broden from the Watershed Sentinel on tomorrow.
Yeah, she's terrific. You got a great magazine as well. Okay, well, we'll look forward to that tomorrow at 11 a.m. Well, thanks a lot, Janine, for coming on the show again.
Well, thanks to you, Chris.
All right, then. Bye-bye until the next time. I'm going to take another brief break, and when I come back, hopefully I'll be joined by Kathy Kelly. In the meantime, I played some B. Dolan last week, and now I dug up in our vast library here another of his, the other one was, sort of concerning Ferguson and Film the Police. And this one is from his disc, Fallen House, Sunken City, and it's called Earth Movers. This is for Zoe and all those other people up there at Burnaby Mountain.
The Earth Movers. Cities in the desert, cities in Antarctica, cities on the moon. Bulldozer back, cold hard hat harvester. Rough gets smooth, everything can move. They got just the tool, everything can move. Got a foreman in the crew, everything can move. Got a union too, everything can move. The earth movers, they rule. Development, settlement, sharp eyes. Dissect space and time with the measurement of lines. Divide dots and flats, plot the map. The flag drop the marker like that. Got plenty, property, proper, documents, safety, goggles, privilege, hard hat, thick skin, big in. We are the architects, you view the blueprint, never stop to rest. Never mind the mess, we're going to Mars next. Father of the projects, God complex. Let there be light, how large is your obelisk? It's a contest. Watch this. Mountain from a molehill, mountaintop removal. Terraform, irrigate, excavate, level grade, damn. It's hydroelectric, it's your boy pipe, layer bobs, sledding through the desert. Left the sandbox since I was 7. Talking toy, permanent permit for demolition. Flatten every surface, destroy difference. Reach the commission just to keep the wheels spinning, but listen. We were born with permission. They see the vision in our clear blue eyes. Air conditioning the ice cubes chilling poolside. Come to Jamaica, come to Dubai. Got a new mayor, cleaning up crime. Got a snow machine, you can ski anytime. Not a cloud to be seen in the dome of the sky. Reshape Parliament to North Manhattan. Wake up on the reservation like what happened. Sleep to the sound of a chainsaw massacre. Wake to the sound of a dump truck backing up. Back that thing up. The earth movers. Building cities in the desert. Cities in Antarctica. Cities on the moon. Bulldozer back. Cold hard hat. Harvester. Rough get smooth. Everything can move. They got just the tool. Everything can move. Got a foreman and a crew. Anything can move. Got a union too. Earth movers. They rule.
Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio, and that's B. Dolan blasting out the big beat there behind me from his disc, Fallen House, Sunken City, and Earth Mover. Well, Kath Kelly is a longtime peace and social justice activist who's lived with and been a witness to the suffering and struggles of people brutalized by war and the business of greed from Afghanistan, Iraq, and Palestine to Central America, Haiti, and at home in the United States, too. She's the recipient of numerous awards for her peace service, including 3 nominations for the Nobel Peace Prize, the Brandon O'Neill Medallion for Social Justice, Oscar Romero Award, the War Resisters League Peace Award, the Chomsky Award of the Justice Studies Association, and too many more to go into here. She's also been recognized by the U.S. government, which has convicted and imprisoned her for steadfastly refusing to allow America's war-making go unchallenged. Kelly is also a co-founder of Voices in the Wilderness and Voices for Creative Nonviolence, has written too many essays and articles to mention, is co-author of the book Prisoners on Purpose, A Peacemaker's Guide to Jails and Prison, and authored the book Other Lands Have Dreams, From Baghdad to Pekin Prison. Welcome back to the program, Kathy.
Well, Chris, thank you for having me.
Well, it's my great pleasure, of course, again. And, Kathy, you're just back again from Afghanistan. Now, tell me, where were you and what were you doing this time around?
Well, this time around, the weather was so much warmer. I've spent the last several winters with a young people's group in Afghanistan called the Afghan Peace Volunteers. And this time I was with the women's community. It's a newly founded group, and really a lovely spot with a garden right in the middle of a yard where we live. The housing groups are called yards. But there was no indoor plumbing, and the latrine was outside, and it was a bit primitive in some ways. But it was very, very encouraging to see something new happening amongst young women
it's very, very difficult for women to assert themselves in what's the most conservative Muslim country in the world. But I've been very impressed by how well they organize this winter project called the Duvet Project, and how well they take care of kids in the Street Kids program. And the well, they're real interested in radio. Maybe you could come over sometime and teach us.
Well, I would if I was as brave or even half as brave as you are. But, I mean, you've been back there many times. Is it safe? I mean, is it safe for people from the West to visit Afghanistan, even in the capital?
Well, you know, the reporter Matthew Akins has coined the word kabubble, and it's really true. Kabul is like a bubble. I mean, 70% of the country now is controlled by Taliban warlords and other warlords. And some people whom I really have a huge respect for in a hospital called the Emergency Surgical Center for Victims of War, they're an Italian-based group, they say that, and they've been there since 2001, they say the control of the country is back to where it was in 2001, which of course makes you wonder, why did the United States spend $2 billion per week on the war, $2.1 million per year per soldier? They're asking for another $58.3 billion for 2015 for military purposes. $104 billion went into non-military spending, and you just have this overwhelming question, for what?
Well,
and then thinking of the lives lost and the people wounded and maimed and displaced and altered for life in many, many different walks of life in Afghanistan and in the United States. So yes, Kabul is a bubble, and yet it's a very, very tense spot. You know, my friend, the medical doctor from Singapore, Hakim, has been there since 2004. But can you ever imagine anybody who survived the Vietnam War wanting to go back into it?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no. And he said he thinks that's part of the high emotional anxiety and stress in Afghanistan today. People are expecting that they might go plunging back into civil war in Kabul, and there's a war going on outside the country. I mean, the greatest cause of civilian deaths right now in Afghanistan is not the improvised explosive devices. It's combat between equally armed sides, the government forces and the anti-government forces, and civilians get caught in the crossfire as the fighting happens very near the civilian places. And then factor in that there are drones, you know, weaponized drones flying overhead all the time, and people have no idea, you know, might that drone be monitoring me? Am I going to be a target? So it's a very, very tense country, and the poverty is just staggering. The extent of disease and starvation, especially amongst children, is terrible. The corruption makes it the most corrupt country in the world, tied with North Korea and Somalia. But I was living in a very conservative neighborhood. In fact, it's so conservative, and there are so few Westerners there that the Taliban never attack anybody there because there aren't any Westerners there except for a handful. And people look at us as though we've come from the moon, really. It's the first time for many that they've ever seen a non-Afghan person.
Well, that might not be such a bad thing, considering the 13 years involvement of the foreigners there, and in Canada, of course, is included. There was much hullabaloo made about the removal of the last French soldiers, and in Canada there was some marking passage of the last Canadian soldiers. And yet, you write in an article just up at Telesur called Uncomplicated in Afghanistan, NATO is announcing that, we're going back, and so Canada and all these other NATO countries will be reintroduced, albeit in another form, back into the country. What's going on with that?
Well, Chris, I think it's so important for us to think about that other form, because 21st century militarism doesn't really require the big, huge, sprawling bases. When you can combine, and what do I mean by you, when the Pentagon and other NATO coalition forces can combine the Joint Special Operations Forces and security contractors who are hired but aren't necessarily accountable to anybody's military, and the drone surveillance and the weaponized drones, then they can have a pretty heavy-duty military imprint on a country if what they want to do is control the pricing and the flow of resources, or be able to control the movements of certain people that they might consider to be a threat. And so I think that the United States is very much planning, and perhaps Canada as well, to remain in Afghanistan. And then, of course, when you look over to Iraq and see that they had declared mission accomplished, they declared that they were wrapping it all up, that all the troops had left, but see how quickly the U.S. went back into Iraq, and see how quickly the killing and the bloodshed rose again. I mean, it's crazy, foolish to think that you can wage war for 13 years and then all of a sudden it's over. Anne Jones was so apt when she entitled one of her books, War Isn't Over When It's Over, because people carry the psychological stresses, the inability to work, the littering of landmines and explosive devices all over the country. I mean, explosive devices from many different countries litter the landscape of Afghanistan. And the unemployment is so high because it's an agricultural country suited for agricultural work, and people can't go out to their fields. And then, to top it all off, the poppy industry has grown so extensive that Afghanistan is now supplying 80 to 90% of the world's opium.
Yeah, and this was announced just recently that the Afghanistan's opium production is at record highs, and the one thing that the first generation of the Taliban had almost eradicated that trade, but not anymore. And you mentioned in your article again, Uncomplicated in Afghanistan, you talk about NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg, and you say that he notes, well, NATO's launching a new chapter in Afghanistan, a new non-combat mission, and yet, as you say, with armed proxies fighting your battles for you, and a resurgent drug trade arming the Taliban and others opposed, all under the watchful eye of the drone above. I mean, I can't believe that NATO doesn't know what's going on and doesn't somehow tacitly approve it to just keep the war rolling.
But when they say non-combat, they mean they're going to train the Afghan National Security Forces. And in fact, one of the most notorious security contractor groups is was Blackwater, and then they changed their name to V, and now it's been changed to Academy, A-C-A-D-E-M-I. And they have a 10-acre spot just outside of Kabul where they're training people in joint special operations commando-type activities, like engaging in night raids or being able to call in drone attacks or being able to round people up and throw them into prisons and interrogate them. And sometimes there are allegations of torture. I think actually the Amnesty International report called Left in the Dark is one of the most chilling, gruesome reports I've read. Amnesty did 10 case studies of allegations that seem to be pretty well substantiated of U.S. and other forces using torture, disappearance, murders, drone attacks, airstrikes against civilians, and then often trying to cover it up and make sure nobody would possibly be held accountable. And we have to read these kinds of reports and study them and think about them and try to imagine what kind of impact this has on people there. And we have to do the same thing with regard to Iraq. You know, how many of the IS fighters might be the brothers or the cousins or the uncles of the 500,000 children that starved to death and died from curable diseases while the economic sanctions were imposed? Mm-hmm. How many of those IS fighters might have been people that were displaced or frightened to death because of a bomb explosion or lost loved ones over the course of the United States bombings and invasion and a chaotic civil war? I mean, we have to try to understand who are the people that are fighting and not see them as grainy images on the screen of a drone operator that have been somehow named bad guys and therefore should be taken out. This is a kind of a barbaric, cartoonized, evil way of looking at the world, and it certainly won't earn us friends or enhance security.
Well, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Kathy Kelly, and Kathy's a longtime peace and social justice activist. She's a co-founder of Voices in the Wilderness and Voices for Creative Nonviolence, co-author of Prisoners on Purpose, A Peacemaker's Guide to Jails and Prison, and author of the book Other Lands Have Dreams, From Baghdad to Pekin Prison. Well, it's curious now. We've just had elections here in my home in British Columbia. You're having the midterm elections down there in the United States. What can we look forward to? Or you just recently had, and the Republicans have made a very strong showing, and the Republicans are more famously more apt to be in favor of expanding foreign wars. What next when in January you've got the Republicans running the show and a very much injured President Obama at their mercy, more or less?
Well, the AUMF, authorized use of military force, seems to be up for grabs right now in terms of when there might be a vote taken to authorize this new war against IS. Will there be an extension of this authorized use of military force, which authorizes any military force? It might be a question of where exactly it might be applied. It does seem as though the war makers have the upper hand, although it might be of some encouragement to Zoe Blunt and others that the Senate did by one vote down the XL pipeline. It's a time when I think people, because they love children and grandchildren and don't want to hand off to future generations payments for all of our wars and, you know, the demands of trying to cope with our beleaguered environment, it's really certainly a time to search for every possible way to engage in nonviolent resistance. And I don't have any prescriptions there. I know I'm going to go to trial December 10th and quite likely be found guilty for having trespassed at a military base where drones are being operated. And my co-coordinator, Brian Terrell, did this action, and he was sentenced to 6 months in prison, and lawyers have told me I should expect the same. But, you know, in our country, here in the United States, there's a war against the poor being waged as well, and it's been going on for so long, and it's hideous. It's a drug war, and it has rounded up 2 million people and placed them in prison, and 7 million people are somewhere in the so-called criminal justice system. And, you know, anti-war activists, peace activists belong inside the prison so that we can sit alongside people trapped there as well as in war zones and try to listen and try to understand and maybe be a voice as possible. But it's the war profiteers who really threaten security, and we have to keep trying to make that clear.
Well, Kathy, your Illinois neighbors in Missouri there, in Ferguson, Missouri, they're on tenterhooks right now. It looks like the National Guard has been called in. Kathy, when you look at when you come from places like Afghanistan or Iraq, and you come home to America and see a militarized police and an oppressed, almost occupied underclass, I mean, are the parallels completely obvious to you?
Well, I think they are very obvious and growing more so, not only between people in the, as you say, in the underclass of the United States and people who don't have any way of meeting their needs in Afghanistan, but also we've had a chance to get to know some of the people who are really at kind of a confluence or a conjunction of environmental struggles, anti-militarist struggles, and efforts to maintain truly egalitarian communities. And I'm thinking of Jeju Island in South Korea, where people have just tried mightily to prevent the wreckage of their pristine coastal shoreline in order to create berths in the sea lane so that huge naval destroyers that carry nuclear weapons would be able to dock there. And in Okinawa, there's also been a mighty struggle to prevent a base called Futenma Base from being situated in a small city in Okinawa. And they managed to, in their elections, elect anti-base people as governor, mayor, and three members of the prefecture. And you see the Okinawa people linking up with the Jeju Island people and linking up with people in the Philippines, and they're linking up with landlocked Afghan peace volunteers. So I think this kind of image of being border-free, not allowing ourselves to be divided by artificial divisions that were created by warlords and following World War I, World War II, not allowing that colonial mentality to prevail over us is very, very important. I think that it's really true. We are all part of one another and one another's efforts to create a world that's not going to be dominated by greed and cruelty.
Well, yeah, and you mentioned the last time we spoke, you talked about the Afghan Peace Volunteers and their Border Free Center and the Duvet Project as well. Now, you mentioned it was warmer than you're used to in Afghanistan this last time you were there, but that's not gonna last, of course, because winter is fast approaching. Can you tell us briefly about the Duvet Project and how that's getting along?
Well, I'm so impressed because the young people they're very careful with this in making sure that the 60 women who will be involved in making these heavy blankets come from each of the three major ethnic divisions. So there are 20 Pashto women, 20 Hazara women, 20 Tajik women. And it's not ordinary for people to work together across those borders, if you will. And then they're very organized about getting all the supplies. You have to get loads and loads of wool and thread and coverlets, and it's got to be pretty organized to make sure that each person gets what she needs. And then the distribution also involves home visits. They visit the home of every woman involved in the project to make sure she really is among the neediest. So they're like young social workers doing these surveys. And then they go out and they visit the people that are going to receive the duvets. And that's very hard. It means going into refugee camps and climbing up mountainsides to visit the widows and orphans and going to the places where people's bodies are so maimed that they can't walk. And it means going to places where people live under bridges, maybe because they've become addicted to opium. And they go out and they find all of these places in Kabul, and they take down phone numbers and organize places for distribution. And, of course, once the distribution starts, as you've said so sensitively, it's freezing, and they don't have gloves and hats, and they're out there shivering, but they know they're doing a good thing, and I think there's a definite pride. Last year, they distributed 3,000 duvets free of charge, and there are many people in Canada and the United States and Australia and the UK who also should feel good about themselves because they paid for it. So if anybody's interested in that duvet project, please feel free to get in touch either at the Voices website, vcnv.org, or go to Our Journey to Smile, which is what the Afghan Peace Volunteers have up. And they're pretty excited right now. Their mentor has been invited to do a TED Talk, which is, I hope, encouraging. They've also got a possibility of getting a plot of land where they can learn organic farming and permaculture, which is as it should be, you know, to be restoring, rehabbing the agricultural infrastructure of that land. And their hearts go out to people in Gaza, to people in Iraq, to people in the United States inside our prisons. Or, you know, I tell them about the number of homeless children, 20,000 in New York alone.
Well,
and, you know, I think when we think about how our resources have been commandeered by, in the United States, the Pentagon and in Canada, your military, it's tremendously important that we recognize what the real terror we all face is, and that's climate change and global warming and environmental destruction. And so we want our resources back. We have to cope with these very real problems.
And stop the wars, for heaven's sakes. Well, Kathy Kelly, again, go to the site, vcnv.org, Voices for Creative Nonviolence, to find out more about Kathy's, what Kathy's been talking about and these projects in Afghanistan as well. Thanks a lot again, Kathy, for coming on the show, and good luck with your trial, and maybe we can talk again before whatever they're going to do to you.
Well, it's always great to be in touch with you. Thank you, Chris, and all good wishes to your listeners.
All right, then, bye-bye. Then, until the next time. Well, that's all I got this week. So thanks to Kathy Kelly there and Zoe Blunt. Keep an eye on Burnaby Mountain, hashtag Burnaby Mountain for the Twitter. Thanks, too, to Janine and her show, again, 11 o'clock. Thursday mornings, Winds of Change. Yeah, that's all I got. Thanks to all the people who make it happen every week. That's all I got for this week. Until the next one. Cities in Antarctica, cities on the moon. Bulldozer back, cold hard hat, harvester, rough, get smooth. Everything can move, they got just the tool. Everything can move, got a foreman and a crew. Anything can move, got a union too. Earth movers, they rule.